Chapter 144. To batter a man down from behind in the dark, on the brink of a river, was well enough, but he ought to have been instantly disabled, whereas he had turned and seized his assailant, and so, to end it before chance help came, and to be rid of him, he had been hurriedly thrown backward into the river before the life was fully beaten out of him. Now if it could be done again, it must not be so done. Supposing his head had been held down under water for a while. Supposing the first blow had been truer. Supposing he had been shot. Supposing he had been strangled. Suppose this way, that way, the other way. Suppose anything but getting unchained from the one idea, for that was inexorably impossible. The school reopened next day. The scholars saw little or no change in their master's face, for it always wore its slowly laboring expression. But, as he heard his classes, he was always doing the deed, and doing it better. As he paused with his piece of chalk at the blackboard, before writing on it, he was thinking of the spot, and whether the water was not deeper, and the fall straighter, a little higher up, or a little lower down. He had half a mind to draw a line or two upon the board, and show himself what he meant. He was doing it again, and improving on the manner, at prayers, in his mental arithmetic, all through his questioning, all through the day. Charlie Hexham was a master now, in another school, under another head. It was evening, and Bradley was walking in his garden observed from behind a blind by gentle little Miss Peacher, who contemplated offering him a loan of her smelling salts for headache, when Marianne, in faithful attendance, held up her arm. "Yes, Marianne? Young Mr. Hexham, if you please, ma'am, coming to see Mr. Headstone. Very good, Marianne. Again Marianne held up her arm. You may speak, Marianne. Mr. Headstone has beckoned young Mr. Hexham into his house, ma'am, and he has gone in himself without waiting for young Mr. Hexham to come up, and now he has gone into, ma'am, and has shut the door. With all my heart, Marianne. Again Marianne's telegraphic arm worked. What more, Marianne? They must find it rather dull and dark, Miss Peacher, for the parlor blind's down, and neither of them pulls it up. There is no accounting, said good Miss Peacher with a little sad sigh which she repressed, by laying her hand on her neat methodical bodice, there is no accounting for tastes, Marianne. Charlie, entering the dark room, stopped short when he saw his old friend in its yellow shade. Come in, Hexham, come in. Charlie advanced to take the hand that was held out to him, but stopped again, short of it. The heavy, bloodshot eyes of the schoolmaster, rising to his face with an effort, met his look of scrutiny. Mr. Headstone, what's the matter? Matter? Where? Mr. Headstone, have you heard the news? This news about the fellow, Mr. Eugene Rayburn? That he is killed? He is dead, then. Exclaimed Bradley. Young Hexham standing looking at him, he moistened his lips with his tongue, looked about the room, glanced at his former pupil, and looked down. I heard of the outrage, said Bradley, trying to constrain his working mouth, but I had not heard the end of it. Where were you, said the boy, advancing a step as he lowered his voice, when it was done. Stop. I don't ask that. Don't tell me. If you force your confidence upon me, Mr. Headstone, I'll give up every word of it. Mind. Take notice. I'll give up it, and I'll give up you. I will. The wretched creature seemed to suffer acutely under this renunciation. A desolate air of utter and complete loneliness fell upon him, like a visible shade. It's for me to speak, not you, said the boy. If you do, you'll do it at your peril. I am going to put your selfishness before you, Mr. Headstone, your passionate, violent, and ungovernable selfishness to show you why I can, and why I will, have nothing more to do with you. Apostrophe, he looked at young Hexam, as if he were waiting for a scholar, to go on with a lesson, that he knew by heart, and was deadly tired of. But he had said his last word to him. If you had any part I don't say what in this attack, apostrophe pursued the boy, or if you know anything about it, I don't say how much, or if you know who did it, I go no closer you did an injury to me, that's never to be forgiven. You know that I took you with me to his chambers in the temple, when I told him my opinion of him, and made myself responsible for my opinion of you. You know that I took you with me, when I was watching him with a view to recovering my sister and bringing her to her senses. You know that I have allowed myself to be mixed up with you, all through this business, in favoring your desire to marry my sister. And how do you know that, pursuing the ends of your own violent temper, you have not laid me open to suspicion? Is that your gratitude to me, Mr. Headstone? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Bradley sat looking steadily before him at the vacant air. As often as young Hexam stopped, he turned his eyes towards him, as if he were waiting for him to go on with the lesson, and get it done. As often as the boy resumed, Bradley resumed his fixed face. I am going to be plain with you, Mr. Headstone, apostrophe said young Hexam, shaking his head in a half-threatening manner, because this is no time for affecting not to know things that I do know except certain things at which it might not be very safe for you to hint again. What I mean is this. If you were a good master, I was a good pupil. I have done you plenty of credit, and in improving my own reputation I have improved yours quite as much. Very well then. Starting on equal terms, I want to put before you how you have shown your gratitude to me for doing all I could to further your wishes with reference to my sister. You have compromised me by being seen about with me, endeavoring to counteract this Mr. Eugene Rayburn. That's the first thing you have done. If my character, and my now dropping you, help me out of that, Mr. Headstone, the deliverance is to be attributed to me, and not to you. No thanks to you for it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the boy stopping again, he moved his eyes again. I am going on, Mr. Headstone, don't you be afraid. I am going on to the end, and I have told you beforehand what the end is. Now, you know my story. You are as well aware as I am, that I have had many disadvantages to leave behind me in life. You have heard me mention my father, and you are sufficiently acquainted with the fact that the home from which I, as I may say, escaped, might have been a more creditable one than it was. My father died, and then it might have been supposed that my way to respectability was pretty clear. No. For then my sister begins. Apostrophe, he spoke as confidently, and with as entire an absence of any telltale color in his cheek, as if there were no softening old time behind him. Not wonderful, for there was none in his hollow empty heart. What is there but self, for selfishness to see behind it? When I speak of my sister, I devoutly wish that you had never seen her, Mr. Headstone. However, you did see her, and that's useless now. I confided in you about her. I explained her character to you, and how she interposed some ridiculous fanciful notions in the way of our being as respectable as I tried for. You fell in love with her, and I favored you with all my might. She could not be induced to favor you, and so we came into collision with this Mr. Eugene Rayburn. Now, what have you done? Why, you have justified my sister in being firmly set against you from first to last, and you have put me in the wrong again. And why have you done it? Because, Mr. Headstone, you are in all your passions so selfish, and so concentrated upon yourself, that you have not bestowed one proper thought on me. Apostrophe, the cool conviction with which the boy took up and held his position could have been derived from no other vice in human nature. It is, apostrophe he went on, actually with tears, an extraordinary circumstance attendant on my life, that every effort I make towards perfect respectability is impeded by somebody else through no fault of mine. Not content with doing what I have put before you, you will drag my name into notoriety through dragging my sisters, which you are pretty sure to do, if my suspicions have any foundation at all, and the worse you prove to be, the harder it will be for me to detach myself from being associated with you in people's minds. Apostrophe, when he had dried his eyes, and heaved a sob over his injuries, he began moving towards the door. However, I have made up my mind that I will become respectable in the scale of society, and that I will not be dragged down by others. I have done with my sister as well as with you. Since she cares so little for me as to care nothing for undermining my respectability, she shall go her way and I will go mine. My prospects are very good, and I mean to follow them alone. Mr. Headstone, I don't say what you have got upon your conscience, for I don't know. Whatever lies upon it, I hope you will see the justice of keeping wide and clear of me, and will find a consolation in completely exonerating all but yourself. I hope, before many years are out, to succeed the master in my present school, and the mistress being a single woman, though some years older than I am, I might even marry her. If it is any comfort to you to know what plans I may work out by keeping myself strictly respectable in the scale of society, these are the plans at present occurring to me. In conclusion, if you feel a sense of having injured me, and a desire to make some small reparation, I hope you will think how respectable you might have been yourself, and will contemplate your blighted existence. Apostrophe, was it strange that the wretched man should take this heavily to heart? Perhaps he had taken the boy to heart, first, through some long laborious years. Perhaps through the same years he had found his drudgery lightened by communication with a brighter and more apprehensive spirit than his own. Perhaps a family resemblance of face and voice between the boy and his sister smote him hard in the gloom of his fallen state. For whichsoever reason, or for all, he drooped his devoted head, when the boy was gone, and shrank together on the floor, and groveled there, with the palms of his hands tight clasping his hot temples, in unutterable misery, and unrelieved by a single tear. Rogue Rider Hood had been busy with the river that day. He had fished with assiduity on the previous evening, but the light was short, and he had fished unsuccessfully. He had fished again that day with better luck, and had carried his fish home to Plashwater Weir Mill Lock House, in a bundle. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.